Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls the Channel. Sports in Depth is a show. Dear Lord, John Coltrane opens every show. And we pay homage to one and only true love. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. Thank you for your blessings and have your way. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. And no matter how much we say, enough of it, we could not say. We thank you, Lord, for another day. And more important, that your will be foremost. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Show, Sports Depth the Show. It is the last day of Black History Month. And in a leap year, we got an extra day. And my good friend Deja Cotamacho was telling me how to say that in Portuguese. And it is a special Sports in Depth in the sense of Black History Month not only ends today, but I'm going to do a mini feature on Bernard Hopkins. I've known Bernard since, really well. 1998, we sat down when I won the IBF Sports Report of the Year. Mel Cosell, little Coco Rooney is here with us, and that was at the IBF convention in Florida, and Bernard came over and he sat at my table, and we talked, and then Bernard, as you know, was a 5-1 underdog when he fought Tito Trinidad in Madison Square Garden in September of 2011. The fight had been postponed because of 9/11. Bernard. And Bernard Hopkins is one of the few guys that in this sport that I've seen that is always in shape. Bernard, Ray Leonard, Roy, when he was on his game, always in shape. I mean, the first Ali was that way too, the first Ali. Evander Holyfield. I mean, just, if you told these guys, hey, man, we got to fight for you tonight. Okay, let's go. I mean, Bernard is a guy that's always been, other guys too, I think, but Bernard, Ray Leonard, Evander Holyfield, the first Ali, Angelo Dundee talked about Ali was always running, running here, running there. They said the high school, Ali would just run away, had to go. Floyd Mayweather Jr. is another guy. His uncle told me, he'll be in the
show. And if you don't mind me saying, Doc, not to interrupt, but if you don't mind me saying, Doc, that I think is one of the keys, the people that you've mentioned, one of the keys to their longevity. Never, even when they're not fighting, your guy, the great Roberto Duran, Doc, I hear that when he wasn't fighting, he ballooned up to 175, 180.
Well, this was the reason why Roger told Ray, and that's the first time I realized they both had R's, Roger, who was a fighter also, Roger told Ray, hey, look, Ray, go ahead and fight him because, he has a tendency to be out of shape. So, you can't lose
because if he's out of shape, you got him. If he's in shape, you know, you can get a rematch, which turned out. But one of the things that Roger had told him, Duran, once he had reached a certain pinnacle, yeah, I heard the stories too. In the early part of his career, like everybody else, he stood fast. He stayed true to the regime. But and that seemed to be a tendency with a lot of the guys because they realize their talent. I remember Harold Weston talked about fighting Saul Mamby. He had a cold, but he was just Saul Mamby, so I can beat Saul Mamby. So got out of his bed, fought Mamby, and went on back to bed. The great Michael Jeffrey Jordan. I remember they had the flu, and he played against Utah, and he dropped into 38 points. And I see Scottie Pippen now helping him back to the bench. You know, and there's that great line by Dr. King. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in times of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of controversy and trials. And
well,
I remember,
it's funny you should say that, Doc, because to this day, I think that's one of Jordan's greatest performances. I mean, the guy could hardly walk, Doc. You know the shape that he was in.
I see Scottie Pippen carrying him back to the bench, but with a look on his face, with a little grin behind him, like, yeah, okay, hey, he may be sick, but hey, you guys are the one that is ill. I think that right there with the, like Spike talked about that night, he had the double nickel against the Knicks, wearing number 45, which was his brother's football number. Him and Larry Bird, Larry 33, was half of the football number that his brother wore as a football player, and the 45. It was for 23 is half of 45, which was the football number that Michael's brother wore. And you're right. I mean, it was just an incredible performance by one of the greatest
really
athletes. And you know, some people say, you know, and those kind of performances, you know, can validate or definitely, you know, substantiate the thought of him being the greatest ever. I mean, the play against Utah's up by one. It's up by one. It's the closing seconds of the game. Utah is up by one. They need a defensive stop. And who steals the ball? Michael Jeffrey Jordan. He's coming down the floor. I wonder who's going to shoot the ball. Maybe he's going to pass it to Scottie. Or maybe he's going to shoot it over to B.J. Armstrong. Or maybe they're going to set up Cartwright in the middle. And maybe I'm crazy. Who's going to shoot the ball? The whole and you can see the face of the fans as he's the ball is in the air and it's going toward the basket, and there are some who already said, "Yeah, we've lost." Great player, and you know he talked. I was reading an article in Cigar Aficionado, and he talked about how going to North Carolina was just so he enjoyed playing at North Carolina more than he did playing the Bulls. It's the first time away from home. We'll get back to Michael. Right now, it's Bernard Hopkins as we continue Black History Month, and I also have some other facts. And we got to start, you know, we talk so much about boxing. Once again, when we talk about boxing here, we have to start off with the first man to win the heavyweight championship of the world, Jack Johnson, December 26, 1908. Henry Armstrong, you know, one of the reasons why Henry Armstrong won three titles and three different weight classes because when he won the featherweight championship, you know, his manager said, well, you know, hey, that's well and good, but, you know, no, nobody's going to pay attention to you. Everybody's talking about Joe Louis. Joe Louis got one title too, but Joe Louis is heavyweight champion of the world. You got to do something to bring attention to yourself because, you know, you didn't beat Joe Louis for the title, so, you know, you got to do something different. So he, after winning the featherweight, he won the lightweight. And after he won the lightweight, He won the welterweight. So when he walked into a room, out of the eight world champions at that time, when you saw Henry Armstrong, who was the idol to Sugar Ray Robinson, when you saw Henry Armstrong, you saw three of the undisputed world titles. It is said that for all intents and purposes, he beat the middleweight champion and was jerked, a combination of always is racism. So therefore, for all intents and purposes, when he walked out that ring, you were looking at the middleweight, the welterweight, the lightweight, and the featherweight champion of the world. So there was only four of the guys that had titles, 12 guys, you know, technically. But this amazing feat. Bernard Hopkins, first fight was a light heavyweight. Harold Weston was one of the guys that brought him on the scene. And Bernard lost his first fight. You know, we were talking, and he said, you know, and it was in Atlantic City. It was his first loss, his pro debut, 10-11-1988 against Clinton Mitchell. Then Bernard kind of got it together. Greg Page, not the heavyweight Greg Page, but Greg Page became his first professional win, and then he just started rocking and rolling. You know, he won from there on then. Bernard didn't lose again until he lost to Roy Jones Jr. He lost his fight in 1988, and then he started rocking and rolling. He didn't lose a fight after getting back in the ring in 1990 until 1993 when he lost to Roy Jones Jr. And that was a 12-round decision. And then after that, he started rocking and rolling again. But the big talk now, as we know, he is fighting Chad Dawson again, once and for all. The highlight, I mean, I met Bernard in 98. He had, in January that year, he TKO'd over Simon Brown. And then August of that year, because after we met in May of that year, he beat Robert Allen. The big fight, the turning point in his career, maybe, could be 2001. In April, he beat Keith Holmes in a 12-round unanimous decision. And then, 5-1 underdog, he beat Tito Trinidad, TKO, 12th round, in Madison Square Garden to become the undisputed middleweight champion of the world. And with that, he went on to become the longest reigning middleweight champion and had the most defenses of any middleweight champion in the history of boxing. That's right, more than Ray Robinson, more than Jake LaMotta, more than Cesar Sodan, Michelle Sardan, and more than marvelous Marvin Hagler. Bernard Hopkins is a guy that straightforward, pulls no punches, tells it like it is. And I was really taken back with a lot of pride. We sat down and talked to the writers at the press conference. Well, he had nothing to say after Dawson's camp made allegations, but he didn't want to. You know what? Without further ado, let me, for the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to listen to the oldest man to win a world championship title, the longest reigning middleweight champion in the history of boxing, the man who had the most title defenses successfully in the history of the middleweight division, and I have seen few performances like the one he gave to Kelly Pavlik down in Atlantic City. I remember after the fight, you know, Bernard said, you know, I'm tired of having to prove myself.
And if you don't mind me saying, Doc, before go you ahead. Go to Bernard, something that he doesn't get a lot of credit for, in-ring psychological genius.
Well, you know, he says there's a lot of Ollie, a lot of psych in him, and it all turns out to Bernard Executioner. I like the B-Hop, but whatever you say, we're talking about one of the great fighters of all time, one of the legends of this time. Ladies and gentlemen, Bernard Executioner, B-Hop Hopkins.
I'm shut them down by not saying nothing. There wasn't no use for me to get up there and defeat that. Y'all ain't come for that. Y'all came for two things. Y'all came to eat, pray, and you came to get finished. So, it's only 24 years, man. I ain't gonna. You're not a rookie. You're not a rookie. He's not a rookie. Most of y'all guys here in front of me, I'm not rookies to this business that y'all can have. I'm not a rookie. I see it coming before it even comes my way. So, they set it up last night. Everything was fixed. Inside, from my side, it was fixed. I'm looking to make history. The third time, maybe four. I'm 6-0 in Atlanta City. That one is in 1988. first place out of the penitentiary. I will be 7-0. April 29th, that's Sunday. Yeah. Well, how was that? That's where I am. That's
what I believe. Not even though the fight went, but take anything away from that.
He's looking to see what he probably thinks today. He
mind. I would ask to be the disability. He's a veteran. He's a legend. No one asked him one question after that. How are you going to be the guy up there that submitted to him? Y'all know how I've been. I've earned it. But I'm going in there no matter what he says to deal with the hard thing. That is to execute the best plan in camp. No more really conversation. I've been talking for 2.5 decades. I just want to go in camp, kiss my family, play with my kids, go back to Miami where I've been training at already for 2 weeks. The reason I got back on the plane to come here is because of the press tour. And I'm out. I'm out.
Your question. See, you got a degree from college, right? Get your money. I just, my opinion, because I'm letting you know, I don't prove to be smart, but you must be a sharp guy. I ain't the average boxer. Boxing is what I do, but it's not who I am. Keep testing me some more. I need some more, and I won't get angry. It's not angry. My emotions are checked. Trust me. I've been out of penitentiary for 24 years. Trust me. My emotions, all that I've seen and all that I've been tested with, you can never get me back there for doing something unemotional or emotionless. So, trust me. As long as you don't take it personal, I won't take it personal. But when you say to me that I want this fight, and then I give you my answer, I'm going to carry on with it. You say, well, they said it. Never repeat what a fool says to you because it's come out of your mouth. You become that fool. Well, my mom always told me that. Never repeat what a fool says. You become that fool. Now, you never sleep with a person if you know he had AIDS with you. Or she. Well, I ain't say he, but I never heard that about you. She. I feel good fighting where I'm at, but obviously I can't downplay it. And I'm in one of my first fight of my career. And they said, playing my full circle of life. I'm going back to where I started my first career. Cop for sure. Great question, man. Because that might have got fixed. Here I'm back. Less than a year and a half out of penitentiary. And my first career, my first loss was in Atlantic City, and I didn't let that failure bring me back to D-Block. Question my heart. You question my legacy. You question where my role at. In the underdog, becoming someone that surprises, and actually turn the clock, turn the page on what people think my life should be like. They've done that before in my personal life. Be dead at 19, 47, and never be nothing. A multi-millionaire, they ain't spending a dollar on your food. I don't sit at the boast, I don't sit at the brag. But if you breathe the same air that I breathe, and you wipe your ass the same way I wipe your ass, if you defecate, then your opinion of me is not my destiny. Boxing is what I do, but it's not who I am. And just like the energy and the history, the legacy of all the people that came before me, I watched a video of Joe Louis, the betrayal of America. I watched the Muhammad Ali. I watched that and I say to myself, and that was last night up at the W across the street. And I watched the betrayal of Joe Louis. Joe Louis was nice to everybody. He was even so nice he cut his career in the peak of it to go fight for a country that fought for him. They asked me why I'm still fighting. I said, I'm getting Joe Louis money. All that Joe Frazier, Joe Louis, and anybody didn't get it, y'all motherfuckers won't pay me. I'm gonna get it. Why are you still fighting? So what? Am I with it? My mask fucked up. Y'all wanna see me fall. I want a crowd to see me when Ali said to the lady, you hear every time. So when I watch the betrayal of Joe Louis, I get motivated by that. Because I feel like I'm in a fight this time. Not that time, but this time. It's all the same shit that's got a different dressing around it.
You're kind of talking about your survival skills being the key to everything.
Survival skills is everything dealing with this.
So how have you evolved?
Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports Depth is a show, and we're listening to Bernard Hopkins. And I think he said some pretty profound things there, Rooney. Rooney? Oh, okay, we'll be back with Mel Smith Jr., and we'll take a little commercial break. And Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports and Death is the show. Some African-American inventions. Black American inventions have changed the way we live. Here's some of the inventions. The wrench. John A. Johnson. The Super Soaker. Lonnie Johnson. Eye Protector. P. Johnson. The Egg Beater. W. Johnson. The Froster. Frederick M. Jones. Air Conditioning Unit. Frederick M. Jones. Two-Cycle Gas Engine. Frederick M. Jones. Internal Combustion Engine. Frederick M. Jones. Starter Generator. Frederick M. Jones. Refrigeration Controls. Frederick M. Jones. Bottle Caps. Jones and Law. Electric Lamp. Latimer and Nicholas. Printing Press. W.A. Lavalette. Laser Fuse. Lester Lee. Pressure Cooker. Maurice W. Lee. Envelope Seal. F.W. Leslie. Window Cleaner. A.L. Lewis. Pencil Sharpener. John L. Love. Fire Extinguisher. Tom J. Marshall. Lock. W.A. Martin. Rocket Catapult. Hugh McDonald. Elevator. Alexander Miles. Gas Mask. Garrett Morgan. Traffic Signal. Garrett Morgan. Hairbrush. Leda Newman. Heating Furnace. Alice H. Parker. Airship. Blimp. Okay. Jeff M. Pickering. Folding Chair. The Pretty and Sad Gear. Fountain Pen. W.B. Purvis. The Dustpan. L.P. Ray. Insect Destroyer Gun. A.C. Richardson. Baby Buggy. W.H. Richardson. Sugar Refinement. N. Rolex. Pressing Comb. Oh, man. Walter Sammons. Clothes Dryer. G.T. Sampson. The Cell Phone. Henry Sampson. Urinalysis Machine. Dewey Sanderson. Hydraulic Shock Absorber. Ralph Sanderson. The Curtain Rod. S.R. Scottrone. The Multi-Stage Rocket. Aldorf Shams. Lawn Sprinkler. J.W. Smith. I mean, this is an amazing array of things that, and I knew about the traffic light, but, you know, it's an amazing array of things that African-Americans have done to not only better America, but to
it
better
really
the
Doc, and half of us have no idea of the amazing and ingenious things that our people have come up with. Just so many things.
And these are things, Rooney, that's been acknowledged. Imagine how many that hadn't. Vivian Thomas, who did the first open heart surgery, African American. Okay. We're gonna get some more here. Going back, Rooney, let's go back and reflect on some of the things that Bernard Hopkins said. I just think it was really.
We gotta remember Bernard for a doc. Just quickly. Like you said, never out of shape. I've never seen him come in the ring out of shape and not prepared to fight. I also remember that I still say he's done some things in the ring psychologically, Doc, that no one really talks that much about that I thought was strokes of genius. Now, pardon me, but what of the fights that he's had not that long ago, Doc, where he actually gets so under the guy, he's doing sit-ups. Between rounds, mid fight, he's doing sit ups between rounds. I'm sorry, push ups,
yeah, huh?
And his opponent, Doc, and you can think of him right now, his name escapes me, but I'll never forget the look on his opponent's face as if to say, I can't be, I see it, but I don't believe it. And
hey,
he wasn't the same
that.
After that, Doc. He wasn't the same. He was psychologically beaten from that point on.
No, you're talking about the Gene Pasquale, the second Gene Pasquale fight when he
Thank
came
you,
back.
Thank you, Doc Pasquale,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and Pasquale was talking about he was going to run through Hopkins and a whole bunch of things. And Bernard, in that segment, talked about how he some kind of way doesn't like the idea of people saying he psychologically psychs out his opponent. He said, you know, you're kind of taking away from my physical abilities. And the always put our five tag words, Sports in Depth. Bernard Hopkins, we've been speaking about him. He's our feature here. Jack Johnson, first African-American to win the heavyweight championship of the world, December 26, 1908. All hell broke loose across America. Black people were robbed, lynched, killed, because now a nigga was heavyweight champ for the world. Also, Floyd Mayweather Jr., Floyd yesterday at a big press conference up in Harlem, apropos Black History Month. First time a press conference, if I can be correct, has been, well, they did have the media. I think it's the first time they had a boxing press conference at the famed Apollo Theater.
Legends were made, Doc. I don't have to tell you,
well, you know,
about the history of the Apollo.
Yeah, I remember the first, they had a fight card at the Apollo there. Cedric Kirshner had a fight card up there. And I remember coming there, and when we got there, all the African-American media was sitting upstairs. And I said, oh, wait a minute. Whoa, wait a minute. I said, wait a minute. Wait a minute. The first fight card ever in the legendary Apollo Theater, and you got the black media sitting upstairs? And I believe it was Jamie Harris who was with me, and Jamie said, hey, Doc, you know, I said, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. And Cedric Kirshner was coming out, and I said, Cedric, I said, you know, what kind of nonsense is this, man? He said, what do you mean? I said, how do you have a fight at the Apollo Theater? And the black media sitting up there, and Leroy Neiman, you know, was then. He looked at Cedric and looked at me, and the late Art Curry was there. And Cedric was like, what do you mean? And then he caught himself. And Curry said, you know, hey, Cedric, you know, everybody said, Cedric, he's right. I mean, how do you have the first ever card at the Apollo Theater, and the African-American media is sitting upstairs in the balcony in Harlem in the Apollo? And Cedric apologized to me. I don't remember if he apologized that particular time, but he apologized to me about that, built a friendship, and I left. I was not going to sit in the balcony in my Apollo Theater, in my Harlem, right, representing my people up in the balcony. I left. I remember Ray Leonard was there as the color man with Lampley. I never got a chance to see Ray. Cause once I was up, I said, where'd your seats at? And we left. Apollo Theater, No, I wasn't going to do it. Apollo Theater actually was an old Irish opera house. You know, back in the day, the African Americans and Irish had some serious fights, you know, for jobs and race wars up in those days. The first female to ever win the amateur night, and also in the notes I have Kelly Swanson. Kelly Swanson has done just a great job with Bernard and with Floyd Mayweather. I mean, you know, she grabbed both of these gentlemen when they were on the ground floor. Kelly has become the eminent, foremost PR female, not only that, one of the most eminent PR people in the business. Okay, not just female, but I say that because next month is female month, and we want to salute Kelly here, and we also, you know, African-American month doesn't always curtail people of color. You know, there are a lot of non-African-Americans color-wise or ethnically who have been played a positive part in our history and our rise. And, you know, Kelly has always had a profound relationship of the African-American. She, you know, Kelly was working with Butch Lewis when I first met Kelly. She was Rock Newman's Girl Friday, and she's working with Butch Lewis, and now has she aspired to be the number one female in this business. And you got to understand the kind of obstacles she had to go through, you know, as a female, as a good-looking female, you know what I mean? And people will want to look at her as competition, and here she is, got two of the greatest fighters to ever enter the square circle, and she's done a remark. I remember when the champ was Floyd was going to fight Gotti. I believe it was Gotti here, and he was here. And I remember, you know, Kelly was right there on the ground floor, you know, made it. And I remember we went out and we went somewhere, and we all got in the cab, and it was time to pay for the cab. And I went to get, she said, "No, Doc." I said, "Hey, Doc,
It's expense money. I got it. A lot of people talk about Kelly. Kelly Swanson is the best to ever do it in her venue. She's been a longtime friend, and she's consistent. And you cannot take away the great job she's done with Bernard Hopkins and Floyd Mayweather Jr. As much as they are legends and champions, ditto is Kelly. She did another great job again. And she's cognizant. She's back in a time where people knew who the people are. There are a lot of people today, PR-wise, who don't know. She knows who the boxing people is. And she's been a credit to the sport of boxing. She's been a credit to her race, the human race. Thank you, Kelly. Love you and Bernard dearly. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network for the show. Mel Smith Jr. is here with me. We're listening to Bernard Hopkins, who we've dedicated the major portion of the show to. He'll be fighting April the 25th, is it? 28th, Atlantic City, against Chad Dawson. It's titled Once and For All. Bernard, as you know, oldest man ever to win a world championship, longest reigning middleweight champion, most successful defenses as a middleweight champion, and all this little guy. And the thing about Bernard, I like, because I remember they used to do this with Don King. Anytime they did a story about Don King, they would always talk about, at one time, he was a former felon. And I can say this so far, unless I haven't seen it, but at least the media here, with the respect for Bernard, people can be liked and respected and respected not liked. Some people could like you, not respect you, and vice versa. And Bernard never has a problem. Bernard shows a picture of his penitentiary. He said, "I keep this on my phone to keep me grounded." Not that he has to do that. It just shows you the kind of guy he is. And I can say, at least, I've never heard the media go into it. Somebody probably has. But the respect for Bernard, Bernard at one time didn't have the notoriety that he has now, nor the respect. It's more than winning that Tito Trinidad fight. I think a lot of the...
Well, something, Doc, if I may, not to interrupt you, Doc, but I'd be remiss, and I'd probably forget it. That's why I'm saying it now, so your fans will have nation of fans will have the benefit of this. Doc, another psychological play, at the Trinidad press conference, I think they were in Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. Bernard said some things just to get under Tito's skin, Doc. He barely got out of the country.
I think Bernard threw this flag down. They probably let Bernard say, we got to let him get back to Madison Square Garden. Tito won't have nobody to beat up on, so we got to let him back. Had the fight been in Puerto Rico, it might have been different. But you can't beat him if you don't get him. And Bernard talked about that too, as he was wearing a. I think he was the first fighter to ever wear that advertisement on his back. He talked about how really the people with the advertisement they were willing really for Tito Trinidad too. and they told Bernard, they're gonna put the ad on, but kind of understand, we don't see you winning, Bernard talked about that after he did win, they were very cordial respectful and very nice to him, and all went well. Bernard Hopkins, the executioner, B-Hop. I remember coming into that Paramount. No, it was still the old felt form. It might have been still the old felt form then. I'm trying to remember.
I have to say this about B-Hop. He was having a really, at the time, it was the fight that everyone was talking about. He was going to fight Oscar De La Hoya. Mm-hmm. And I believe Oscar was moving up to challenge Bernard for his title. And
yeah, exactly.
I remember Bernard being on another show and speaking. I remember he was being interviewed once. And this is how I knew he was going to beat Oscar De La Hoya. At the time, I was kind of, feeling my way as to who was going to win. Wasn't quite sure. I was thinking, this is how I knew he was going to win that fight, Don. The question to him was, Bernard, with all of your success, and fame and riches, do you still want it badly enough? Are you a little soft now? Has the fame, has the fame and the celebrity, made you any less, diligent in what you do? And I remember him saying this time. He said, Let me tell you something. I will never forget that time, as you said, incarcerated. Let me tell you why. And Doc, he went on to say how, whenever I wanted any kind of toasted bread or a cup of hot water for coffee, he went on, Doctor, how he would ingeniously put some wires into the coffee cup and attach it to something else and have to wait for like darn near an hour or so to get like hot water so he could make a cup of coffee. And how, and I don't know how this is, Doc, but how he would put these same wires and connect them to like a shoebox and put the bread in the box, and it would take like an hour and a half, and then you have toasty bread if you wanted toast. And he said, so let me tell you something. I will never, ever be soft. I will never rest on my laurels. Do you know where I'm from, where I came from? And Doc, I remember him saying with such sincerity,
conviction.
Like almost like he was just recalling those days then.
Conviction.
I remember saying, you know something, this dude is not soft. The fame and the fortune hasn't gotten him. He's going to be Arsenio La Hoya, Jack. He is dead serious. And Doc, he meant every word he said, and he went out and did what he said.
Well, you know, and the thing about Bernard, that fight was in 2004, September 18th, a knockout of Oscar De La Hoya, hit him with a body shot. Oscar never got back. And he proved, and Bernard Hopkins, that fight, and a lot of people didn't understand what Bernard Hopkins did. Bernard Hopkins proved the adage of a good big man never loses to a good little man. And I look back at the difference between him and Riddick Bowe. And, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back here. Doc Stanley Sports Network with Blake, Radio Network, Rainbow Soldier Channel, Sports Network with the show. It is the last of the Black History Month shows, as this is the last day of Black History. We got about a good 40-odd minutes as we got to X-ray leap year. I've got to find the exact term how to say that in Portuguese. Año, I should try to go whole decio. But let's take a break. We'll be right back.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Miles Dewey Davis, as we continue with Black History Month segment. And Bernard Hopkins is close. I just thought listening to him was just so educational, so profound, And he said, hey, man, I'm and he said something, and a lot of people, Bernard said something that a lot of people never took into account, that, Joe gave up prime years of his life, prime years of his career. I mean, we're not even talking about the money, okay? But prime years of his career. I remember they said, the United States government, Joe's mother, as great mothers do, Joe's mother had always kept a little bank account for Joe. Okay? The United States government took the bank account. And she had like $607, and they took the bank account that Joe's mother had left him. Took the bank account. Here's a guy who gave up whole purses. Okay? Whole purses. And this is the gratitude. This is the thanks. And Brian, I talked about the Ali. You know what I mean? My name ain't Cassie anymore. It's Muhammad Ali. I mean, people forget, Ali had a hernia operation. Now, he beat Liston in 64. He didn't fight again until May of 65. Black History Month, as we play Miles Davis in the back, considered one of the greatest trumpeters of all time, Louis Armstrong is in that class. J.J. Johnson, what a tremendous trombone player. Leroy Neiman thinks he's the greatest of all time. I want to say hello out there in Brazil to my dear friend Rosie. Rosie is a devout Sports and Death listener, Rooney, a devout Sports and Death listener, you know, and she uses it to improve her English. Want to say hello to Natalia. Natalia, that sweetheart of yours will heal. And Evelini, two of my friends in San Paulo. My good friend Jessica Damasio is funny. You know, it's 28 days in February 9th, times out of 10. And March 1st would have been today. And Desio, you know, had everything planned and set to go to the airport today. And he had to go make a last stop someplace. And he said, okay, hey, that's the March 1st day. No, it's not March 1st. It's tomorrow. I said, what do you mean? No, today is March 29th. February 29th. He said, what? So it was funny. International Motor Desio caught Damasio Jr. Floyd Mayweather Jr., Cinco de Mayo against Miguel Cotto in Las Vegas. But Bernard Hopkins was our main crush. I just really liked what Bernard had to say. And I
make no mistake that what he's accomplished in terms of longevity is quite a feat. No, folks don't realize, Doc, really, how really tough that is to do. Record number of title defenses. Like I said, the length of time that he's been around fighting really all types of guys.
Fighting,
you know,
the best.
Thing
I mean,
that you'll
hear. The thing with Bernard, and I remember kind of shitting on him when he fought Jermaine Taylor. And, you know, you could see the early part of the fight, he kind of let Jermaine swim out into the deep waters, and then he came after him. If that had been a 15-round fight, Bernard would have won the fight. I was a little peeved at Bernard. I said, Dad, Bernard, well, no, why are you waiting now to fight? But he had a plan. But like I said, it was a 12-round instead of a 15-round. And I knew once the title was out of his hand, he wasn't going to get it back. But you look at the big fight, the Tarver fight, no doubt in my mind, no doubt in my mind that he was going to beat Tarver. No, and I remember the press conference. Tarver bought a rocking chair, and I think Bernard said he took the rocking chair back. It would have been a gift to Bernard, but he wound up taking it back. Bernard Hopkins, one of the legendary great fighters of our time, and a friend of mine to a degree. You know, he always stopped, says hello, and I remember him sitting at my table back in 1998 when I had won the 1997 IBF Sports Reporter Year Award. I remember Mickey Mantle and Bob Lee Jr. was there, and I asked Bob, I said, Bob, you know, because Larry Hardesty had won it 2 years in a row, and Marion Boykin had won it the year before. So we had like a 3-year run of New York City-based writers winning it. And sportscasters, and I asked Bob, we had Mickey Mantle, legendary Larry Hardesty, the greatest African sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, and the sideline reporter for the Jets, and I asked Bob Lewis, I said, Bob, who won the award this year? And I see Bob now, he says, Doc, I don't know. He said, you know what, let me call my dad. So he's calling his dad because we wanted to make the announcement on Larry's show, and he said, Doc, he said, what, you won? I said, won what? You won the award this year. I said, what? Had a great time. Went down there. Bernard was there. Some of the referees. This was a special affair. You know, anytime you can win an award in the IBF, African American base solidified, was special. And I think everybody says, I remember great Howie Evans. Buddy of mine, we were going to get our teeth to watch the Duran-Hagler fight. And I introduced Joe to the legendary Howie Evans, sports editor of the Hampton News. And Joe, this is Howie. And he looked at me, he said, now, he may tell you he's a sports writer, he said, but he's a boxing fighter. And I remember Howie Evans said it. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake, but with Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Depth of the show. Ronnie, I guess we can talk a little bit about the Sports and Depth Hall of Fame, the Trust in God Sports and Depth Entertainment Hall of Fame, as
you know. Doc, before you say that, let me say this to your vast, very vast audience,
mm-hmm.
okay? You
mm-hmm.
know, from around the world. I just want to tell the folks that, you know, when I first, you know, was very privileged and honored enough to see your Hall of Fame, it seems like you have a baseball from every meaningful pitcher that ever played the game, a bat from every meaningful hitter that ever played the game, or glove, a football or some cleats or shoulder pads or knee pads from every meaningful football player that ever played the game, a pair of gloves or hand wraps or some such thing from every meaningful fighter that ever bought. I mean, Doc, a basketball, pair of sneakers, pads or whatever from every meaningful basketball player. I remember being a young wannabe rider trying to get my foot in the sports door, and you being nice enough to, you know, take me under your wing and show me the ropes. And after the Knick game, going down to the locker room, and none other than Charles Barkley looking larger than life, saying,
"Round mound of rebound."
I'm sorry, Doc.
The round mound of rebound.
Indeed, and I remember the great Charles Barkley saying, "Doc, your sneakers, Doc. That's right. I'm supposed to have the sneakers for you, Doc." And I remember thinking right then and there, wow, I got Charles Barkley right here, larger than life, talking to Doc about the sneakers that he's supposed to have autographed for him. And that was just one of many, many memories, Doc, and which the athletes, seeing how the high esteem in which the athletes and people in general hold you. It was really good stuff.
Well, thanks, Rooney. Just blessed by the good Lord. And, you know, DocStanleySports.com is the site. Rooney, thanks so much for those kind words.
Just speak the truth, Doc, but you're welcome, of course.
Well, thanks a lot, my friend. My brother, happy birthday, champ. I want to read a birthday poem I wrote to Floyd Mayweather Jr. Happy birthday, champ. Enjoy your special day. Happy birthday, champ. Hope like you, it is special in every way. Happy birthday, champ. Few of you can rate. There's no question, champ. You are truly an all-time great. Happy birthday, Floyd. Or should I say money? But then again, like Ray Robinson, Floyd, you're smooth and sweet like honey. Happy birthday, Mr. Mayweather, the best of your generation. Truly one of the greatest ever, and I say that without hesitation. So relax today, champ. Today you can thank God for blessing you again to see. And we too like you, champ. Thank God he made you and our life to be. So off to see the kids, champ, or dinner with Ella B. The rebirth to you, champ. May God bless and always keep thee. And a little birthday poem to Floyd Mayweather Jr., 42-0, 26 knockouts, considered by many the best fighter in the world, pound for pound, and I am part of that contingency. Eddie Murray, whose birthday is celebrated on the 24th of February, as is that of Floyd Mayweather Jr., I'm proud to have in my Sports and F collection two of his bats. Eddie Murray is one of only four guys in the history of baseball, all minorities, to be in the double 500 3,000 hit club. Over 3,000 hits, over 500 home runs, and 500 doubles. The three guys, the first one, the incomparable, the legendary Willie Mays. And he was followed by none other than Hank Aaron. And then after Hank Aaron, Eddie Murray joined him. And the last to join the club is none other than Rafael Palmeiro, who makes up the only left-handed batter in that contingency. So now you've got two righties, one lefty, and switch it, Eddie Murray. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network is the show. Everybody ready to fuck up. Larry Hardy is going to say goodnight for us. And leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today. You have to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others is the room you pay for your space on earth. Big hop. Good luck, baby. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Rainbow Soul Channel. Sports and Death is the show. Larry Hardy, Stevie.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Rooney, it's always been a pleasure, and we'll do it again soon, my friend.
Thank you so much, Doctor. The pleasure. Pleasure for me, always and absolutely. Thank you so much, Doc.
Ronnie, real quickly, your picks now.
We got Bernard against Dobson. Who are you liking that fight?
You know, Doc, every time I say that Bernard might be getting a little older and whatnot, he proves me wrong. So quite frankly, I'm just going to stop picking against him until somebody beats him. I'm going to tell you, the guy never seems to age. And Doc, every time I say, well, is he getting a little older now? He proves me wrong. So I'm going with Bernard until I see differently, doggone it. That's about it. Until I see different, I'm going with Bernard.
You know, there's that great line I read some years ago by Helen Hayes. And Helen Hayes says, you know, age is only important in a cheese. We got Hopkins against Chad Dawson. I'm going to go with you on that one. We've got Manny Pacquiao against Timothy Bradley. Who are you liking that one?
I think even though Pacquiao actually is getting a little up in age himself now, but I don't see Bradley beating him just yet, Doc. I think Bradley needs a little more seasoning, and I don't know how he's going to react to being on this huge stage, you know, the really big stage right now. So until I see otherwise, I'll go with the old war horse and Pacquiao in this one.
Tremendous point there about the big stage. Bradley assured us that the big stage, he said, just another fight. Talking with Gilberto Ortiz from Working on Boxing, the Latin side of Working on Boxing, he said, you know, reading on his site that, there's a rematch clause already in this fight. A lot of people saying Pacquiao is not as focused as it used to be. Some talks of some outside activities. I like Bradley in this one. Like I said,
you're going with I think the upset, Doc. I think you're going with, oh, go ahead, Doc. I got another one here. I want your vast audience to know that they are getting a bit of surprise. I don't know you're going with the young pup in this one.
I like Bradley. I mean, and I've said this for a long time. There's only three guys unbeatable. The first Ali, the one they stripped, and Marion Boykin always says Marion beat Boykin. And the B stands for Black, Bodacious, Brilliant, and Brother. Greatest boxing show in the history of television, be it cable, pay-per-view, you know, his Working on Boxing was just unparalleled. And everybody was on that show. And I remember when he brought me in as one of the co-hosts, you know, I couldn't walk down the streets of New York City without saying, hey, Doc, hey, boy. I mean, they loved it. We'd be at basketball games. There were guys who would come out of the stands and talk boxing at a Knick game. It's no question that we've got Miguel Cotto, who's been an outstanding fighter. I've said this again right now. The best fighter in the world, pound for pound, is none other than Floyd. Pretty boy Money Mayweather. I see the fight against Miguel Cotto as he'll be 43-0 when it's over with. It could be 43-0 with a 27 knockout. Who do you like in that one?
I agree with you in that particular fight, Doc, that Floyd has obviously the tools to stick and move, use his movement and unbelievable energy. However, I do see a way Cotto could win this fight if he can force, and I say if, he can force Mayweather to fight at his pace. What Mayweather is so great at that people don't really talk about is that he usually dictates the pace when we're going to actually fight. He usually does a great job of dictating the pace and instinctively giving what I call the shoulder. He blocks so many punches, you know, tucking that shoulder in and what have you. If Cotto can make Floyd fight when Cotto wants to make him fight, not have him dictate the pace, he'll have a shot. Otherwise, Floyd wins this rumble going away.
Well, I think you know, Cotto has two chances, slim and none. Slim is out of town. And sometimes, you know, you don't want to be careful what you wish for. You know, a lot of people thought that about Ray Leonard, that he couldn't fight. I remember Ollie Dunlap told the great story of when they went to Mike Trainer's office, and they're sitting there, and the trainer turns to him and says, well, you know, can he fight? And Ollie, Jakes Morton, look at you, they start laughing. Is he kidding? What, this is Ray Leonard. I mean, he just came back on the greatest boxing team, Olympic-wise, in American history. He's got a gold medal. What do you mean, can he fight? Trainer said, no. I know he can box. Can he fight? Ray Leonard showed that in Duran. And a great fight. A lot of people said a close fight. He showed that against Tommy Hearns. And you know, maybe pushing Floyd to fight may not be what you want. I mean, Tommy showed us in that fight
his boxing ability. I was stunned from what I'm hearing from the great Howard Weston. That Tommy Hearns didn't have a knockout as an amateur.
Isn't that really hard to believe that as an amateur he wasn't a puncher?
It's befuddling, you know. I said, wow, you know. And then, so Hopkins, Mayweather, and Bradley are the guys I like. Like I said, there's only three guys that were unbeatable that ever entered the ring. Ray Robinson is welterweight, 77-0, never lost a fight as a welterweight. 5 years they ducked Ray, so he couldn't get a shot at the welterweight. I mean,
let me ask you something. I have to ask you this before we get off the air. What is it about Bradley and his style, Doc, that gives you
that
he's going to win this rumble? What do you think he's going to do to beat Pacquiao, Doc?
Let me get back to Ray. Ray Robinson, and this is mind-boggling. Ray Robinson was 77-0 before he got a title shot. 77-0 before he got a title shot. Not 17. And because they didn't want, well, you know, racism in the country as we end Black History Month, they didn't want a black man to be the welterweight champion of the world. Bradley showed me a lot. And where I saw Bradley, it was apropos for me, in my beloved Brazil, and my beloved Fortaleza, watching the fight at the Zippy Bar, and I saw him get up. And Marion Boykin always says this, you know, the measure of a fighter and greatness is what he does when he gets knocked on the canvas and what he does after he loses. Bernard Hopkins lost his very first fight. The rest of his history. Okay? And Bradley got up off of that shot from Holt. Got up. And won the fight. And I saw that fight. I said, man, I like this guy. He heart. You know, and it's amazing that guys who enter into the ring, a lot of guys don't have any heart. I mean, you would think so. I mean, Howard Weston said, you know, you give me the big muscular guys. Give me the Ernie Shavers. Give me the Kenny Nortons. Fine. You know, hey, I can fight them. You know, it's the thin, wiry guys I got to watch for. I like his confidence. He has the ability. He has the tools. Pacquiao has had some tough fights. I mean, you know, Pacquiao took a beating. He may beat Margarito, but, you know, he won the war, but that was a hell of a battle. And then Marquez. I mean, and Bradley said this, you know, I'm not saying I have the style because Marquez evidently has his number, but, you know, Manny.
Fits. That's like Norton and Ali. He used to give Ali fits.
Well, but see, now the thing with that is if the first Ali had fought Norton, he'd have ran through Norton like a hot knife.
Oh, that's
butter.
No contest.
I mean,
the first
yeah,
Ali.
Yeah, I mean, but they caught Ali, like as Marion Boykin says, in trilogies, 1, 2, and 3. Okay, so he caught the second Ali. But had he caught the first Ali, had Ali never had to become inactive, Ali would have never lost. I mean, I thought he beat Joe the first time, but it'd been a lot more convincing. You know, they would have fought sooner than what they would have fought had Ali not been stripped. So you figure instead of fighting in 71, they'd have fought maybe 2 years before that. You know, and that Ali that has still been in shape. I mean, because people forget, as Bernard mentioned about the loss of prime years for Joe, Ali lost his prime years. I mean, you know, because a lot of people thought when Ali lost, I remember seeing articles, goodbye Ali, after he lost to Joe, that was done. And then they did the same thing with Joe. When Joe lost the rematch, they were saying goodbye to Joe. That shows you how much they know. Was that Bernard's stupid questions? But no, I like Bradley. I mean, would not to Pacquiao. I think Pacquiao is nowhere near what he's made up to be. And Jim Lampley. Oh, he's been. What does Lampley know about? You know, he must be drinking with Merchant or something. I mean, you know, and the same thing with you know, Aaron made this. You know, I've worked with Ali. I've worked with Duran. I worked with Hearns. I worked with Leonard. But Pacquiao's the only guy to have in Times Square his own board. They didn't have those in the day of Remy. You don't think Ray Leonard would have had a board up there? I mean, Ali would have had the whole damn block. You know, it would kill me. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Then I said, well, you know, he's the only guy I know that right now has his own Learjet. They didn't have a Learjet. I mean, Ali would have had anything that Pacquiao has, Ali would have had three times. And Ray Leonard, Tommy, and Durant. I mean, you know,
Durant was the biggest thing outside of Ali in his era. And in fact, they were 1-1-8. They were still in the, because it was the second Ali. He was the best fighter of pound for pound. But I mean, and a lot of what Richard Schaefer was saying yesterday is that what's being confirmed. Bob doesn't want to make the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, but as Ray Leonard said on the night that Frankie Randall beat Julio Chavez, Ray was in the press room with us, and he said something that's so profound. He said, there comes a time when it's not about the money, but about being the champ. And Floyd talked about that yesterday. He said, you know, I called Pacquiao. I tried to explain to him the kind of money he can make. I tried to explain to him the kind of money he's really not getting. And he said, you know, he doesn't have to, you know, not playing, not the sharpest of knives. And you got to question his heart. I mean, you got to question his heart. I mean, look at Joe when he fought Ali the third time. Hey, come on, let's do this, you know. Ray Robinson, he lost to Jake LaMotta. Ray's 94-0. Loses to Jake LaMotta and fights Jake LaMotta again the same month. Not the same year. The same month. Jake, let's do this again. And Jake is like, hey, man, you singing my song. You singing my song. They did it again in the same month. The same month. Okay? Two fights that went 15 rounds. 30 rounds in 1 month. That's 30 rounds in 1 month with Ray Robinson or Jake LaMotta. That's too much for some guy's lifetime.
Well, let me say this, Doc, before, otherwise I'd be remiss. Even though I'm picking both of the favorites, Mayweather over Cotto and Pacquiao over Bradley, let me add this caveat, okay? Both of those guys are due and primed for a loss, okay? Really, both of those guys have been around a long time. Obviously, both of them have obviously been winning for a long time. I got to tell you, Doc, that both of them would be, I'm not saying looking past anyone in thoughts of each other, but quite frankly, both of them would be primed for a loss right about now, no doubt.
Well, you know what, and Doc Stanley Sports Def on the Blake Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Def show, I guess we're basically into Mike on life, so we're supposed to spend the night. But, you know, it's just two schools of thought here. You know, Mayweather and Ellerby said yesterday, hey, as far as they're concerned, there's not going to be a Pacquiao fight, so they're not looking past the Pacquiao. As far as they're concerned,
well, I predicted that about a year ago. But go ahead.
You know, yeah, you know, they said, hey, but look, you know, hey, you know, as far as we're concerned, it's the great line that my great friend Ozzy Smith always used, and was, hey, Ozzy, I think you'll be in town anytime soon. Come to New York. Ozzy said, you know, no, I don't see it on the radar screen, you know, and
sure.
Ellerby and Floyd and Charlie Swanson, they don't see that fight. So Floyd is not looking past that, and Pacquiao is not seeing that fight. So he's not looking, and Floyd said again, you know, hey, man, just take the test. I mean, you know, Floyd said this when he's going to fight Ortiz. If my O's got to go, it's got to be legit. That's all, you know. And I'm not, you know, he said, you know, the use of steroids in baseball, okay, guys are using that to hit a ball with a bat. We're hitting each other. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Hey, I'm the best. Take the test. If my O's got to go, you know, I got no problem. Take the test, and then you'll be the best. If you win it, you know, take it. And, you know, and you just got to keep saying, no, but what is it why he won't take the test if you're innocent? I mean,
even though both of them, I'm picking both of the favorites in their prospective rumbles, as I said, either one of them are kind of primed for an upset. If it's going to happen, it would happen right about now. Either Cotto upsetting Mayweather or Bradley upsetting Pacquiao. They all kind of primed for an upset right about now, Doc, and that supposed $50 million payday for them both. No more.
Well, like I said, you know, Floyd turned 35. I don't see, you know, it's funny you say this, because Bradley said at the press conference, in fact, we did it on the show Sunday, you know, and an interview, he said, hey, you know, Pacquiao can't beat Mayweather. Mayweather's too smart for him. And Mayweather talked yesterday how inadvertently you got to question the intellect of Pacquiao. If I sit here and tell you, hey, you can make more money doing this,
you can make more money fighting me, and you get a bigger cut of the money, and you still say no? And it's about heart. You know, it's like, hey, man, they talked about basketball, games on the line, and somebody needs to take the shot. And somehow, you know, he couldn't get through the pick. Somehow he couldn't get to the ball. Yet Oscar can always get to the ball. Jordan can always get to the ball. Rick Barry, Dr. J, Isaiah Thomas can always get to the ball. So, I mean, my thing, and we'll be running those interviews in the ensuing weeks, is just that, it was confirmed with me and Jim Smith and Messina all along, and George Willis, one of 22 African columnists in the world today, up from 11. So Willis, actually, you know, Willis is one of the 11 they had, so they've only added 10 more since his inception about a decade ago. But, it's obvious. You know, Bob has kept saying stuff like, Shaver said himself, you know, he can't get Bob in the room. Now, let's sit down and talk this up. No, Bob won't come. Other people on the phone, you know what I mean? So it's obvious. Roger, ironically, in talking with Roger Mayweather, the trainer and uncle of Floyd, he says he still thinks the fight is going to happen.
Think it's going to come off?
Yeah, he still thinks it's going to come up, but maybe it'll be the children fighting each other, because right now it doesn't seem it's going to happen, you know. Like the four Valley Frazier fight was the two daughters fighting. So maybe that may be the case.
By the way, let me say this about that fight, Doc. The folks don't remember. When the two daughters fought, it was a fight worthy of their fathers. I mean, I'm not really much into women boxing, but let me be fair and let me say this. The Rumble was a bona fide war. And for women fighting, you can't get a better fight. They were worthy of their fathers that night. A tremendous fight, a tremendous war. It showed guts, courage, great conditioning. They did their father's name proud that night. They really did. As fighting goes, they held their own.
Hell no. Doc Stanley Sports Net for the Blake, better know with Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Net for the show. DocStanleySports.com is the Trust in God, Sports in Depth, Artifacts, Hall of Fame Entertainment. People said, Doc Entertainment, what do you mean? Well, boxing and sports and entertainment, they're so intertwined. You know what I mean? I remember watching it, sitting at a ringside fight and looking and seeing the lovely Miss Natalie Cole. Over there, wow, who's that? Is that, oh my goodness, that's Pierce Bronson, you know what I mean? Everybody always comes to the big fights. And in the course of working with Don Thomas, I have autographed Miles Davis album, an autographed Tony Bennett album, and with a up him at the Saratoga Jazz Festival, got a chance to run into so many people up there. B.B. King autograph, with the Franklin album, Nancy Wilson, they're the first lady of song. Nancy Wilson, The Whispers. Told you about Tony Bennett. One of my favorite, the great jazz saxophonist of all time, Stanley Turrentine. I got a chance to meet him as I was doing some stand-up comedy. And Grover Washington Jr. autographs albums, autographs CDs. I have some autograph things from Paquito Rivera, the great Cuban saxophonist, the legendary Sergio Cruz, the legendary Ray, the legendary Johnny Pacheco, the legendary Tito Puente, you know. And I remember after one basketball game, there's this guy walking across the court at Madison Square Garden, Rooney. It's Anthony Quinn. It's Anthony Quinn. The man.
What a tremendous actor. I know something, Doc, is funny you should mention Anthony Quinn. Pardon me for interrupting, I mean to, you know, step on your lines. But you know something, Doc, it's so funny that you should mention the great Anthony Quinn. He was one of the stars in what, for my money, is possibly the greatest boxing movie of all time, along with the great one, Jackie Gleason, and the great Mickey Rooney, okay? And I don't have to tell you that it was just a tremendous portrayal of a former boxer, heavyweight, who was down on his luck. The great, great movie Requiem for a Heavyweight.
Requiem for a Heavyweight, right there with the that great Leo, Marlon Brando. You know, the thing about Quinn too, because he stopped and my photographer, he said, that, you know, I asked him to take a picture, but he said he didn't have the lighting. I said, what? And he autographed, got a Frank Harvey Anthony Quinn autograph. And I remember Quinn from Viva Zapata. It was a, we were going to spend the night at my cousin Rocky's house. And he used to have a lady called Alicia. Ding, 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 ding. You would have 11 o'clock, it would come on after the news. He had the late show, and Viva Zapata, and Quinn, I saw his Oscar-winning performance as a brother of Emiliano Zapata, who's one of my heroes. It's amazing about Zapata. Brando played a tremendous part. And I remember I was out in Vegas one time, and I stopped in this store. I think I have the ring. No, I don't think I have that ring anymore. I should have that ring. And I stopped at this store and bought a turquoise ring, and there's a picture of a guy there. And I turned to the lady and said, that's Emiliano Zapata, right? And she said, yeah, I'd never seen him, Emiliano Zapata. And he played the brother. And he also won another Oscar as Best Supporting Actor again and only played about 5 minutes in the whole movie. Now, that's amazing, isn't it? He played five minutes in the movie and won Best Supporting Actor. It was stunning. But, he's one of the other guys. I got a chance to meet him. Denzel Washington. Denzel courtside at the Knicks game. The Knicks game to anybody. Everybody got a chance to sit there, you know, kick it with him. Great guy.
Let me tell the folks something that they don't know about you, that, all right, Doc? You schools with everybody, all right? All sports legends, acting legends. I remember being at a championship fight at the Garden. And while they were waiting for the prelims to go off and had a brief intermission, I turn around, I'm like, no, where is Doc now? I turn around, and there you are comparing notes with the legendary artist, Leroy Neiman.
I'm glad you know it's a great line, great intro. The first Leroy Neiman, I have a hoard of Leroy reprints. Here in the studio, I'm looking at, there's a Leroy Neiman, Casey Stengel reprint, and then on the back here, there's another one from the Chavez and Colonel Whitaker fight autographed by both of them and him. And then I had a section. Leroy did a book from the first Liston fight. And the book is a white book. And you know, he sat around one day and had all this stuff from the fight. He had the scorer's cards. He said, Leroy, how'd you get him? He said, those days, they didn't get it. They just threw the suckers on the floor. And I'm proud of this one because I took the shots. And I have a try photo display of my shots, and Leroy autographed all of them. So I'm watching now a really tremendous display in Leroy. Now, Leroy, I'm going through Playboy magazine in about 72 maybe, and I see this reprint of the first Ali Frazier fight. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take this. I'm going to have this guy autographed. Just started getting ready. I didn't think we'd become close friends. So I'm going to run into him somewhere online. And I got Leroy to autograph it. I got Ali and Joe to autograph it. And I got the referee, Arthur McCanty, to autograph it.
Arthur McCanty.
I wasn't content with that. I got the PR man to autograph the legendary John Francis Xavier Condon. And I got the matchmaker, the legendary Teddy Brenner. So
Teddy
all
Brenner,
of them,
wow. That,
all of autographed
who's
that.
Who's who of
oh,
virtual
yes,
who's who?
Who? And Leroy... I remember Leroy, the first time I met Leroy, he was out at the Nassau Coliseum doing sketches for a drawing he's going to do on Dr. J. And we were sitting there, and we just started talking, hobnobbing. And he said, you know, after he did a couple, he said, which one you think is the best? And I said, I think that one is the best, you know what I mean? And I asked him, could I have one? He said, no, I need these. And sure, later on that year, as you know, Julius and Turquoise are godparents of my first two kids. Right, Turquoise, my daughter's named after godmother Turquoise. And I was in the house, and I saw the drawing they did, and it was the one that I told Leroy I thought was the best. Me and Leroy became friends Now he's one of my closest friends. If I believe I've got hordes of his reprints. He did a tremendous charcoal. A lot of you know I just stand up comedy, and he came to one of my shows, and he said, "You know, Mel, you know what? Give me time. I'm gonna do something." And about 3 weeks later, sent to the house. He did a tripart in charcoal of me performing, and he sent me also his signature on one of those. You have to hold up to the light to see his signature, you know, to Mel Leroy Neiman. And I call Leroy 2-3 times a week. I try to get over there and see him as often as I can now. Leroy had his 90th birthday on June 8th. He'll be 91 this year. Leroy had bad luck with having last year, lost one of his legs. But he always told me that boxing is his passion. And we became one of my closest friends. And we really became a lot closer because he has this deep admiration for Marion Borkin and Borkin on boxing. People have to understand how much Borkin on boxing has been a part of the history of this city from a television standpoint of view and the history of boxing from this country and the world. I mean, I remember I was up at the Cotton Club and David Allen Greer, we were talking, and we were sitting there both in our tuxedos and we were hobnobbing. That's when he would say, "Okay, Doc." And he said, "Well, hey, you know, what do you know?" I said, "Well," I said, "no, I said, I'm, you know, I'm doing some writing." Retired police officer said, "And I was hosting for a while a boxing show, Borkin on Boxing." And he said, "Borkin on Boxing?" He said, "Man, when I was in New York City, every Monday afternoon, I watched Borkin on Boxing." I thought Mike Tyson was going to tear my head off when I was talking to Mike one time, and he thought I inadvertently said that he didn't know Marion Borkin or Borkin. I said, "What do you mean?" And Leroy, boxing is one of his passions, and we just became, you know, it was one of those things. We, you know, and became great friends, and I'm really proud. I asked Leroy one time, it's in the Sports and Death Trust and God Hall of Fame. I walked along the street one day, and I saw this nice pair of white loafers that somebody had threw in the top of the thing, garbage. And the only reason why they threw it there because inadvertently somebody had inside one of the, on the top of it, had did some graffiti. And I just took them. You know, I said, "It's just going to be clean." And I went by Leroy. I said, "Leroy, you know," I said, I got a pair of loafers here. Do me a favor. I said, "You know, when you paint, could you just dip the residue of the paint on the shoes for me?" He said, "Okay, Mel." You know what I mean? I mean, me asking the legendary great Leroy, but just shows you the kind of person he is. And he gave them things back to me a couple weeks later. I mean, these are Leroy Neiman canvas done work on a pair of loafers. You know, I have some. I remember the charcoal he did for me. I remember the last thing he gave me was a Muhammad Ali reprint. I'm looking at that as that hung up against the wall. In the bedroom there, my bedroom, I think I've got about 15 reprints. I got a John McEnroe reprint. I try to not only get Leroy to autograph them, but I also try to get the artist, the athlete. So I've got one McEnroe autograph, the Bernard Hopkins, poster he did for Bernard and Oscar. I got that autographed. By both of them and Leroy. So I try to do a unique thing. I try to not only get Leroy, but the artist. And as John Cain said, these were things that I never ever thought about putting on display. It's just things that I you know, collected. And Marion Borkin said, you know, people gave to me. He used to say, "Man, these people are crazy." Doc got this stuff at home. I remember that Paulette Bruno told the great story at the Boxing Hall of Fame when they first opened up. She turned to her husband and she said, "Mel's got more stuff than this." I just try to do different things, you know, hand wraps from different fighters. I remember when Jackie Robinson in 1997, they gave us all a baseball, and my idea was to get as many players who played with and against Jackie on that ball. And Joe DiMaggio's on the ball, Duke Snyder, Pee Wee Reese, Billy Martin. Unique. Try different things, and it was just, like I said, it's been the batting gloves collection I have. It was just the fact that the guys had them there, and it's, "Oh, here you go, Doc." You know, I have the 3,000 hit club. I was surprised at some of the guys. There were 28 guys in the club, and I've got out of that club, I got Winfield, I have Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken Jr.,
Ricky Henderson, Tony Gwynn, George Brett. I've got a Derek Bat.
You might as well just call it Doc. Not only your collection, but your Hall of Fame collection. Well, you're talking about Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Basically,
you know, there's things here that one of my prized possessions is that first Leroy Neiman piece. I have a bat, a Babe Ruth model bat that I had home run champions autograph. You know, guys who were home run champions: Darryl Strawberry, Ken Griffey Jr., Frank Howard, Frank Robinson, the only African American to win the Triple Crown and the only man in baseball history to win MVP in both leagues. Andrew Jones.
Let me
see
how vast your collection is, Doc. That your vast worldwide fans don't know. Let me tell them how vast your incredible collection of sports memorabilia is. I remember being privileged enough to see your sports museum. I walk in, and the first picture I see is my old high school classmate and the first Puerto Rican featherweight champion of the world ever, Juan Laporte.
And not only that, Juan, a great friend of mine, gave me a pair of boxing shoes that in my Hall of Fame. I mean, because he's the first Puerto Rican. And I was there that night that he beat Miranda on a Don King card in Madison Square Garden with Emil Griffin in his
corner. And Doc, ironically, so was I. He beat Mario Miranda
for the
featherweight
Featherweight, and became the first Puerto Rican ever to win the featherweight championship of the world. Yeah, he's Terry Norris before he fought Ray. First, only guy to beat Ray at Madison Square. Ray only fought one time at Madison Square Garden. I have that poster, autographed by Ray and Terry Norris. In fact, I have a pair of Terry's boxing shoes, and Ray signed those gloves. I got a great picture because Ray was doing promotion. He was sitting courtside at a game, and little did we know at that time, they took a picture of me, him, and my good friend Willie Randolph. Little did we know that Willie Randolph would become the first African American manager of the New York Mets, and you know, just like I said, they have 3,000 hit guys: Winfield, Brett, Molitor, Ricky Henderson, Tony Gwynn, Cal Ripken Jr., Eddie Murray, Paul Molitor, and Derek Jeter. My own little 3,000 hit club section, and I'm proud to have two of the bats from the two double 500, 3,000, and Eddie Murray, the only switch hitter to ever do it, and also Rafael Palmeiro, only left-handed bat ever do it. Now, I have also an autographed Carl Yastrzemski bat. Carl Yastrzemski is the last man in the 20th century to win the Triple Crown. And how I got that was I have a friend of mine who got married, and he had a Carl Yastrzemski bat. And he's a devout New York Knicks fan and loved Patrick Ewing. I don't think anybody has more Ewing loved like me, you know, and the Cap, as I call him, him and Willis, be the large captain. He would always, you know, never ask me, yeah, here you go. And so I traded off a pair of Cap sneakers for Carl Yastrzemski, autographed Carl Yastrzemski bat. And the guy kind of had, it was glad because he had gotten married, and the bat was a gift from his old girlfriend. So he was kind of killing two birds with one stone. And it worked out for the doctor. Rudy, we better roll before they cut us off here. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, Doc, I see, indeed. I just want to know, it's always a pleasure and an honor to be on your show, Doc. I have met so many people that I would never have even dreamed of meeting, athletes and actors and singers and dancers, that I wouldn't have had a prayer and you know where of ever coming in contact with, much less musing with, on account of you being so giving, you know, of yourself and whatnot, taking a young sports reporter, trying to get us with the door. And taking me under your wing. So I salute you and Black History Month as one of the legendary scribes in this business, and thank you for everything, Doc.
Rooney, all good and wonderful things come from God, my friend, and you touch a vital part of this show. To others, I am somebody, and you have you brought that a point well taken, your great line, and Sport for Deaf Nation. Recapping, Jack Johnson, first African-American to win the heavyweight championship of the world, December 26, 1908. Bernard Hopkins, oldest man ever to win a world championship and the longest reigning
middleweight champion in boxing history, and the most successful defenses. Kelly Swanson, the first lady of PR in boxing, and one of the best PR people, period. Floyd Mayweather Jr., the undisputed pound-for-pound king in boxing today. Doc Stanley, Sports Enough on the Blake Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Enough of the show. Rooney, we'll get together over the weekend. Thank you so very much, my friend. Leave it with three thoughts. Live your life today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, my friend. Leave your life today, and if you stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And I heard another one, Ray. The ultimate measure of a man is not the way he stands in times of comfort and convenience, the way he stands in times of trial and controversy. And I think about Ali. Service to others, you pay for your space on earth. I simply say, God bless you all, and trust in God. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, with Mel Cosell, Little Kel Kel Rooney, saluting our last Black History Month show. Bernard Hopkins was our feature, and a special thanks to Kelly Swanson and Lisa and that great crew of hers, that PR crew for the photos that we will be using. Jack Johnson, first African American heavyweight champion. Floyd, pretty boy, Money Mayweather, the best fighter in the world, pound for pound, one of the greats of all time. This is Sports and Death. Doc Stanley on the Blink Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports and Death is showing now the greatest African American sportscast in the history of New York City radio, which means you're the best of all times, Larry Hardesty. Larry, say goodnight for us.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And with that, DocStanleySports.com. And also remember, Blake Radio. You want to make a little contribution, www.blakeradio.com. Make a little donation here. You can catch us on your iPhones. You can catch us on your cell phone now. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio. And just thanks so much for your time, for being a part of the Blake Radio Network. Trust in God.
Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.